Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Faith All Over the Place, the little podcast about people just talking about faith. Just regular conversations, and you know we don't do a lot of preparedness here. We just go with what's on our minds, but today's a little bit different. This is episode number 15, joining you pre-recorded from an already sort of hot day in the Sonoran Desert. I'm Stephen Cruiser, coming to me from deep in the woods of Georgia. Where he is probably wearing a tinfoil hat. My good friend, Chris Queen.
Telling you what, 15 episodes, one more episode and we can drive.
That's yes, one more episode we can drive, but we still can't rent a car.
That's right.
So, Chris, our guest today is one who is a friend of yours, Chris. So why don't you introduce him?
All right. Our guest today is probably my longest continuous friendship. I've known him since I was in kindergarten. He was in pre-K. We served together for many, many years on staff at Eastridge Church, and he is currently the, what is your title, Trey?
Yeah, man. Just the doer of things.
I like it. And he is also, and the reason why we're having him on today is because he serves on our local school board. So we're going to talk today about what it means to be a public servant and a person of faith. So everybody welcome Trey Bailey to the show.
Trey Bailey, hey. Thank you very much. Chris has been talking about you for weeks. I'm glad you could join us today.
Well, Stephen, nice to meet you. And Chris, good to hear from you again.
Yes.
Yeah, I was boring them with a Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder story before. Before we get into that, I think that because everything is just so off the rails with late night television, I just keep going back to like stuff from the 70s now. just to ground myself and go, yeah, it wasn't insane. It doesn't matter. Everything's changed. We'll all be watching TV on chips in our brains in 10 years. So,
oh my goodness, yeah.
Why don't you just give us a little how you got, what made you decide to run for the school board? We don't usually do a lot of politics here, but the school board thing has been a passion of mine for a long time.
Okay.
People on the right, people of faith getting involved in their local school board. So why don't you just tell us how that came about?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, I didn't seek to get into politics, that's for sure. Now, Chris may argue that point being, you know, in student council and stuff in high school, but certainly didn't think that would lead to any sort of political aspirations. I didn't have that. And so what actually happened was the district that I live in, we have five districts in our county, Newton County, and the public school board member for District One, he was vacating his spot. And so I guess in how they appoint these things is the board gets together and talks about who might be a similar candidate who is already in the position. And so he reached out to me and just said, hey, you know, we've been talking. We know you grew up in a house with an educator. My mom educated for 30 plus years, and my wife's an educator, 30 years. And so they were just like, they said, hey, you know, you got kids in the school system. We feel like you might fit on the school board. So I actually got appointed for a vacated position. And then, you know, once I got in, and there's only so long you can kind of, you know, raise your fist and go, you guys got to change. This stuff's got to change. And then you find yourself at the table, right, where the decisions are made. And you're like, oh, okay, now I got to do something about this. And so that was kind of the way it began. And then this is now I'm entering my 10th year, ran for a couple of different reelections and won those, and now heading into a new campaign season next year. So all said and done, if I am reelected, we'll be looking at like 14 years on the school board in Newton County.
Whoa.
I know.
I can't believe it's been that long. That's insane. I was thinking it was like 7 or 8 years, but it's been 10. Yeah. Wow.
It feels like 45 years.
Yeah, no doubt. what does a typical, say, week in the life of a school board member look like?
Oh man, Chris, you know, it depends on the season, certainly. Mm-hmm. The end of the school year, May, there's 1,000 events. And so you just have to pick and choose like which high school honors nights you're going to go to and which, you know, academic banquets and sports banquets. But this time of the year, we just came out of budget season, and budget season is very intense. Lots of meetings where, especially in this kind of climate, you know, where DOGE was all the rage just a little while ago. Mm-hmm. We were kind of doing that same work at the Board of Education. And so we were digging through every line item. And so it just took tons of time and energy and just getting into the school year now. So now we have all these, well, actually, once you get the budget set, then you have millage rate hearings, and this is super exciting for all your listeners, I'm sure. But you know, that's the taxable rate on your property values is the millage rate, and so your local boards of education and board of commissioners set that rate. And so, you know, we're entering into the millage rate hearing season so that we determine at what rate we will tax our local constituents in order to fully fund public education in Newton County. So it's been super busy right now. We're right at starting the new year. So this is kind of ramped up, and my phone will probably ring off the hook for the next couple of weeks as,
oh, no doubt.
You know, parents begin to ask, you know, why doesn't my kid have this? What about this thing over here? Why does that school do that? And some of those things I won't be able to answer, right? It'll just be getting them to the right people. Yeah. So what's the day, a week look like? Usually a lot of emails from parents, sometimes from, you know, teachers wanting some more advocacy for them. And then, you know, just the policy making that we do, we interact with each other all the time to talk about, you know, what ideas are we talking about? What things can we change? We have some, when legislation happens at the dome, well, in our state, in Georgia, right? Like when things happen at the Gold Dome in Atlanta, the legislators make laws about education, and the local school boards then have to enact those laws. And so we have to create new policies for that. And some of it's incredibly enriching, and some of it is just, you know, boring as heck. But there you go.
You're a numbers guy, so I know you dig all that budgeting stuff.
I do. And they call me the, well, I don't know if it's nice to say anymore, but they're like, hey, the budget Nazi, right? So like, if it comes down to school expenditures, I want the kids and the teachers to have what they need. But you know, there's a lot of excess sometimes when you get to using government dollars. So yeah, I do love that stuff. And I love finding as many ways to save as we possibly can.
Well, we can blame Seinfeld for that. He's the one who made Nazi, with the soup Nazi, the thing about it just means you're, it just means you're intense about something all of a sudden. Right. Now he's like
no soup like, for you.
We like the most famous Jewish sitcom star in history made, you know, brought Nazi into the vernacular.
That's so right,
exactly. Yeah.
Somebody who was really intense about what they were doing.
Yeah. No number two pencils for you.
Yeah, no number two pencils. So here's one of the things I wonder, and this is going to get to, because we are going to talk about the whole faith journey in this here. I was wondering, you know, you're talking about teachers wanting more advocacy, parents want more of this. Do you ever feel like everybody's working in harmony, or do you feel like you're thrown like directly in the middle of two warring factions?
Right. Well, so I have to go to bed every night with a teacher, so I'm probably going to err there.
Okay.
But certainly, yes, you can feel as if you're pulled, you know, like Stretch Armstrong at times. And you know, and we might get into this in a minute, like my whole life mantra is probably like to live life in the messy middle. So we actually have to run, we have to claim a party when we run for Board of Education here. It's not a nonpartisan thing, which it should be, but that's a whole nother can of legislative worms. And so I'm registered as a Republican, but I've spent all of my life as a Libertarian. Like I was a card carrying member of the Libertarian Party until I became a school board member. And because really there was no Liberty, like I had to replace the guy who was already there and he was a Republican. So I've always been kind of this really moderate centrist when it comes to the Republican you know, mantra. And I mean, they're political stances and stuff. I've never been a really strong bullet point Republican, but you know, and some people have names for that. I've certainly been called Rhino before, you know, Republican in name only. But what I was getting at is, yes, being in that middle, that messy middle. And I forgot who said this, but you take enemy fire from both sides, right? Like you get, when you're in the middle, both polarities attack you. I feel like I try to handle the situations with diplomacy, to really try to hear everyone's perspective. And then, you know, if we've made a good decision, I feel like I can explain that to both parties as best as I can.
Mm-hmm. Well, so bringing it into the faith arena, have there ever been times where you have felt like a crisis of where political issues and your Christian faith were at odds?
Man, that's a great question. You know, I'd love to say that that you know, who I am, the decisions I make, the way I think, I really hope that that is embedded in the faith that I profess. I hope that there's not a discrepancy when it comes to my thoughts and actions. Do I ever feel like it's faith is compromised? I don't think so, Chris. I mean, there may be at times like ethics, and I know ethics could be tied strongly mm-hmm. to, you know, your faith.
Right.
But let's say like if we're in an executive session, right? And on the board, an executive session means that's confidential. We're talking about personnel or land, you know, potential debt or things like that. Sometimes, you know, you can kind of wrestle with, man, we're talking about someone and they're not there. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, I guess you have to do that on personnel issues at that level. We've got, you know, almost 3,000 employees. And so not everyone acts like they're supposed to all the time. So, you know, maybe there's some of that sometimes where you feel like, you know, am I talking about someone? I'd rather be talking with someone, but I'm not in a position where I can do that, you know, potential litigation and things like that. So maybe there. Mm. But I think most of the decisions we make, you know, we're also in the Bible Belt, right? Like we're right. in the Deep South. Yep. And so we're not always hit with some of those controversial topics that others are across the nation. You know, the critical race theory thing was really big for a few minutes and it just never hit us. You know, we had conversations amongst our board about it. And that would be something I would probably tie to faith in a certain way, you know, how mm-hmm. you view mm-hmm. those kind of things. So I hope not, but I'm sure there's some tension there sometimes.
Well, there's a general godlessness in public education in America right now that really is not that really is not constitutionally mandated. The left has bastardized the establishment clause to the point where, you know, it's you can't say one nation under God while you're doing the pledge or stuff like that. It's
right.
So yes, you're in the Bible Belt, but you're still part of public education in America is still part of a larger ravenous secular beast that is moving the entire culture in a direction that isn't always the greatest thing. So at some point, do you ever feel like, is there an ick factor with that? Do you like, just like, you know, it's public education. I mean, you're public. It's all, you know, it's, you're not the same as the Los Angeles Unified School District, but right, you know, you're part of the same beast.
Yeah, I get that. I think to me, because I so believe in local public education that, mm-hmm. that I do feel like our board is able to ward off some of these things that really are talking points and narratives that just aren't. I mean, I know you say we're connected and we are in as much that we publicly educate, right? We educate the children in our community. We don't turn anyone away, no matter what their condition, no matter their demographic, no matter any of those things. We take them all and we do our best to love on them and teach them as best we can. Everybody has an opportunity in public education. The things that we teach, like our curriculum, is really more determined by the state and not the federal.
Yeah.
And so that does help us a lot. So we really don't look anything like, you know, Los Angeles Unified School District. And there's often times where we don't even look like Atlanta Public City Schools. Right.
That's
so
good.
You know. Mm-hmm. So there's so much local control, at least in the state of Georgia. And man, I'm going to continue to advocate and fight for that because your community should be the ones who voice how to educate their children. It shouldn't be something that comes from on high or from 4,000 miles away. You know,
right.
We can get to the dome in Atlanta in 45 minutes to an hour. Well, at least we used to could. I think there's some Atlanta traffic jokes now about how long it might take.
Depends on the construction.
But I could at any point pick up the phone and call my legislator and say, hey, whatever education bill is coming down the line, let's talk about it because it affects us. And here's, you know, my perspective on it. So I do think, you know, state control, local control is the best way to do public education with its warts and all.
I have like a million questions just about the school board stuff. But again, we're talking about faith there. And I want to piggyback on something that Chris and I were just talking about in last week's episode about how when you're in the world of politics, like you're in it mm-hmm. and we're in it writing about it and everything, the opportunities for having your faith tested are like minute by minute. It's like just like a hailstorm of tests to see.
Every Every word is a decision, right? Like you have to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it's like, you know, it's easy to be a great witness and everything. If you know, there's a reason people used to become hermits. You go out in the shack in the middle of nowhere. You know, right. I'm a brilliant Christian when I'm not talking to other people. It's a piece of cake. I go out for a walk in the morning. Totally then I meet someone and I'm like, 10 minutes later, I'm going, talk to the Lord about how I responded there. That was not good. I was just, do you ever feel like it's being tested again? You're in the Bible Belt. We know that everything. Like, so, but mm-hmm. So it's not like you're, you know, I'm sitting here in the middle of a like blue heathenville right now. It's, do you ever feel like it's just like, you know what? It would just be easier to just, you know, chill. Not just from the work standpoint, but you know, it'd just be easier all around for me as a person to be a better person, to be a better Christian, if I didn't have to deal with this crap. That's the way I want to put it. Do you ever feel that way?
Absolutely. And when specific issues come up and it gets, you know, controversial, right? And so everyone wants to have their say. I listened to the episode last week. So that, you know, when social media is the place that everyone wants to go to argue about something that really should take a lot more than 140 characters. There's nuance, there's all those different things. But yes, I totally feel it when I see a Christian brother on social media wearing me out, not being Christ-like, and it's everything you can do to bite your tongue and to try to be diplomatic, certainly to be Christ-like, sure, yes, that, but to also be diplomatic, like to listen, to hear, to find the piece, the nugget of truth that's in their rant and try to ignore the rest. And, you know, as a person of faith, I would say I can't do that in my flesh. Like it has to be the work of the Holy Spirit. That's who gives us peace, patience, kindness. You know, like the fruit of the Spirit is the Spirit. It's not the fruit of me. So there's definitely a dying to self when it comes to those moments, or else, you know, we would just wear our witness out, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. to bring it a little more personal, do you look at education, public education, a different way now that your kids are getting older?
Man, you know, I probably do, Chris. Really, because they're at the place now where they're going into the next phase. They're going to post-secondary. Yeah. And I know that's maybe public, maybe not. Sometimes it's partially public funded, but yeah, I do kind of worry at the academic and at the collegiate level, some of the things that they're going to have to sort through, and some of the, you know, it's critical thinking, it's expanding their mind. But at some point, man, I want them to remember those roots that we've established at home. And my kids are probably the kind that will go away to college, and so there'll be even less opportunity for me to speak into, you know, whatever ideology they're getting fed at, you know, potentially very liberal, you know, post-secondary school. I do worry about it a little bit more.
unless they're going to Hillsdale, I would say the potential is great. That's a parenting thing too. I mean, if you've laid the foundation well, then you're good. It's like people always, I never indoctrinated my daughter politically because I think that's just if there's one thing a kid's going to rebel against instantly, if they want to establish independence, it's going to be a political separation from their parents. I think so. I'd let that alone. I figured she'd come around the first time she pays, it'll be like a normal person. The first time she has to start paying taxes for real, she's going, well, this is garbage. And so she goes to college and she gets out, and my other people were going, like, your daughter's kind of a liberal. And she's kind of a left-leaning libertarian, I would say. And except for some social things, she's way left and everything. I said, but I got her out of college and she's still Catholic. So that's the win I'm taking. She didn't go to college and then decide she wasn't a person of faith anymore. I got that win going there right now.
Yeah. To God be the glory.
Yes. And this whole test of faith thing, I've been thinking about it so much since last week's episode too. And, you know, we're talking about how you respond personally to things. And then Do you ever feel that after a while that's actually starting to imbue the work and maybe save it from this, like, this secular heathenism garbage that fulfills most of public education? Do you think you're moving the needle there?
I would love to say yes. Now, I don't pretend to be that arrogant and confident, but I would say that, you know, just from speaking with people in our community, they appreciate the diplomacy. They do appreciate the ability to have a conversation, to even, like, violently disagree with me, but to, for me to hear it out and then, you know, let them give their chance to have their say and then try to explain the decision the best I can. A lot of things in public education is truly educating the other people, right? Not even our students, but educating our constituents and our public about how the tax dollars work and how curriculum works and how critical race theory is not baked into every math problem, right? Like, yes, there's opportunity for those things to happen, but if you have a good school board, they can help keep a fence around that. So, you know, am I making a difference? Man, I hope so. You could probably ask, you know, people in the community better than me, because they're going to know and feel it, I hope.
Since you are in a place where people are a little more politically similar, are you surrounded by like-minded people on the school board?
Oh, see, that's a great question. And actually, we're not. So right here on, and I don't know how much Chris has described our little diamond-shaped county of Newton County, but we're right on the border of Metro Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so you could draw a line straight through the middle of this little diamond of a county. And it really is even called the West Side and the East Side. It's like some kind of rap battle from the 90s or something. But, you know, the West Side of the county certainly identifies with urban Atlanta. And the East Side of the county, the part in which I live in, is very much still rural Georgia. And so you do have this great divide. So our school board has 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans currently on the school board. If we were to vote something along political lines, we would lose every time. The Republicans would lose every time.
Right.
So it's really much more about making the best decision for the children involved. And so as long as I can keep that diplomacy within the board members, like working across those party lines, then we'll continue to make the right decisions, the best decisions for our community.
You're making a great case for the local control of schools again too. So it's like, I'm thinking about Faith, and I'm also thinking about, boy, he's basically making the sales pitch for nuking the Department of Education too.
right.
There we go.
Cut the federal purse strings.
And yes.
So it's, I don't know, Chris, I'm sorry. But you know him. That's why I'm asking all the questions.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine.
I have like 1,000 questions that we could just talk. Cause school, I'll tell you this. I think I've talked about this before. I might have talked about this with your pastor too when he was on, Chris. I have been a conservative activist for over 40 years now, and at 41, I worked on my first campaign in 1984. And I've always been a big school choice person. I've always been a big school board, get involved in your school board person. I was on a speaking tour in Virginia in 2012 before the election, and we stopped at this one place where all these young people were on the phones and making signs and printing up flyers and doing all kinds of stuff. And they took us in to introduce us to them. And I said, what are you guys doing here? And they said, we're trying to get conservatives elected to school boards and city councils. And I went around and shook every one of their hands. And I said, you're doing the God's work of politics here.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is, so I've been a big advocate for conservative people who want to change the moral fabric of the public education system, and getting involved in the school system for that reason, getting involved in school boards for that reason, and also because the Democrats use the school boards as basically the minor leagues. That's how they all learn to run campaigns.
Oh, yeah, office. Right.
So, sure. I mean, if you're saying you're going to be in for 14 years, nobody on the left does that. It's just a stepping right. stone for all of them. They're right. like, yeah, I'm going to be on the school board for 2 terms, and then I'm going to run for Congress.
Well, Stephen, I'll tell you, I just had an opportunity, and Chris might know a little bit more about this, but our Senate seat came available, our state Senate seat for Georgia. Our district here came up, the senator decided to run for attorney general, and he'd been in that seat about 10 years. And so I had a lot of pressure, a lot of folks asking me, would I run for the state Senate? And I'll admit, I thought about it. I prayed about it. I, I was 98% in. I was ready to do this thing. And then went back to my local school board meeting. And it was at the end of the school year, and we were getting this kind of recap of all the things that had happened, not just anecdotally, but the data, how we had been moving the needle as a school board and how the system was getting better. And, you know, one of our key initiatives right now, and the thing that we keep saying over and over, is we're going to be the fastest improving district in the state. And we're well on our way to doing that. And so I was listening to this report, and honestly, like, it felt a bit like the Holy Spirit just moved my heart. I mean, I almost got emotional in this board meeting. Right? I was supposed to be the stoic board member up here listening to this report going, right, of course. And instead, I'm like almost in tears because I'm so overwhelmed at what's happening. To see these kids, you know, the literacy is such a huge problem in America, especially in the Deep South. And we just have seen some gains. We've seen some real gains. And it was through a local education foundation had helped us with some curriculum type things to help professional learning for teachers. I mean, I was just telling you, I had an opportunity to move on, and probably the best chance to win the seat would have been right now. Mm-hmm. And instead, I just could not walk away from the school board at this time. So I knew my heart was there. I knew there was still ministry to be done there. And I guess because maybe I really did feel like the needle was being moved, that I thought, not now, it's just not the time. So maybe I will end up 14 years into the school board, and maybe there'll be opportunity to help affect legislation at the state in the future. But for right now, man, you know, you cut me and I'm going to bleed public education in Newton County.
That's a great story for two reasons. First of all, you know, looking at, you know, all of life, like your mission, and it's not just, you know, oh, well, over here, I'm just this guy and I'm just purely man of the world numbers guy over on the school board, but looking at it and being moved by the Holy Spirit to stay there. But it's also heartening to me because at least if there were Republicans, if there were GOP higher ups in Georgia trying to get you to run for the Senate, it means they're starting to get it. Which, yeah, trust me, they just didn't for so long. I mean, every little thing, and I do thank the Lord for that too frequently, that it's not always like beating my head against a wall trying to get the Republicans to do the right thing. Because, you know, if you spend any amount of time in conservative activism, conservative media, as Chris and I know, you spend equal amount of time fighting Republican establishment as you do.
Right.
Democrats.
Yeah, that's true.
There's so much. And I during the Tea Party era, especially, I swear we spent more time fighting the Republicans than we did the Democrats.
Right. Friendly fire. Yeah.
So that's a great showing that they get it, but also being moved and understanding. And there's a thing that I like about people of faith. Chris and I talk about this. We talk about praying about something. You pray about the small things in your life, the decisions, and you ask, you know, you say, okay, I need to figure this out. And I like the fact that that's coming back into the national conversation more. People talking about that all the time. I prayed about this. I prayed about it because that was like stigmatized for a long time. So I think that's another good sign for this kind. We're not at a kumbaya unity candle moment yet.
Not yet.
but we're trying to get there at least.
Yeah. I look at it like this, and this is part of the whole Christian and public service. Like this is, I have a like six core values that they're me. I can't escape them. I know they're me. And when someone steps on one of these values, it hurts. And I know it is, you know, it's what it is. But one of my core values is humble influence. And that's just using whatever God-given influence that you have to help others, not for personal gain, not for position or prestige, but just to do the right thing. And influence people, not in some sort of hubris way or like grandstanding. It's just what is best for the community. And I'll tell you part, like, I love Daniel. The story of Daniel in the Bible is fantastic.
He's in
exile, right? Like he's in a land, let's say he's in a blue liberal land, Stephen, right? Like he's in this place in Babylon, and he is so true to himself. He's true to the Lord. He remains faithful. But, you know, Jeremiah the prophet writes to those people. So Jeremiah is writing to the people who are in Babylon. And Jeremiah 29:7 is like a foundational verse for me. And it's where Jeremiah is prophesying for the Lord. And he says, seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you. Because, see, these Christians not Christians at the time, but these Jewish people were thinking, you know, we're in exile. We're captive. The Lord must not be looking upon us anymore. And the Lord says to them, seek the welfare of this city. go ahead, actually marry some of these people, have kids here, have businesses here where they'll let you. Like, and Daniel rose up the ranks in Babylon, of all places, right? Joseph did a very similar thing where just the favor of the Lord, and he says to them, do what's right for that city, whether in Egypt or whether in Babylon or whether in Covington, Georgia. You know, I want to be able to seek the welfare of this city, believers and unbelievers, Republicans and Democrats. You know, just, man, what can we do to bring unity, not uniformity, but to bring unity in our community? And I just, you know, I feel like that is so embedded in the scriptures. And, you know, I hope it's the ethos in which our community begins to live and breathe and operate. So that's a little peek of like why I do what I do, I guess.
Community being an essential focal point there too, because when you get out, as we talked about last week, get offline, get out and you go talk to your neighbors. I had a great conversation with one of my neighbors last week. I'll tell you guys about it after we're done recording. And like, we don't need to do it. But that, I think that that's why I will not refer to the online community anymore. Because it's not a community. Okay.
Right.
That's Amen. It's a digital gathering. It's not a community. Not that I haven't met, like, Stephen Green and I became friends from Twitter. Okay. See, I've made wonderful friends over the years from being online and everything, but it was a little different beast then too. We were kind of like Wild West pioneers back in the early days of Twitter. But it's not really a community, because when you don't have to have personal contact, it's easier to be a jerk. It's easier to be self-serving. It's easier to just like lash out. Lately, it's just been bugging the heck out of me, and I'm usually pretty chill. Lately, I've just been avoiding it because I'm going, yeah, I just don't have the bandwidth for this right now. But I think community is a great word and a great focal point there. Sorry, Chris, you were going to, I jumped all over you again.
Yeah, I was going to piggyback off the concept of humble influence and kind of look at not just school board, but just being a community figure. I mean, when you're out and about, people know you're on the school board. They know you work at a church. They know you have a podcast that has a lot of local influence. How do you balance knowing that you kind of have to be on your toes and be at your best behavior without feeling like it's performative or even legalistic?
Man, that is a question, right? Like, you know this life too, because right, you lived in the church ministry world for a long time, and it can feel like the glass house, right? Like, it's like everyone sees what you do, and you know, again, back to scripture, if you approach everything with clean hands and a clean heart, you shouldn't have to worry a whole lot, right, about what do people see. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not squeaky clean by any means, but you just conduct yourself in a way that hopefully is, of course, pleasing to the Lord, or as Paul might say, to show your faith, you know, like you're worthy of to have the faith. Mm. So I don't know, you know, we're going to blow it here and there for sure. But I think if we take every decision, you know, it's about slowing down, right? We slow down, think about every decision before we just impulsively jump into something. Even, you know, I'll kick back to you here, Stephen, for this, because I know you're a Catholic, right?
Yes.
And so in your faith, there's you don't pray like when you get up in the morning. You pray all through the day. There's multiple times where you pray. And I have a bit of an Anglican bent myself. And so, you know, there's multiple times during the day that I stop and have a regular time of prayer. That alone will keep your head straight a little bit, right? Because you're forced to stop.
Especially when I'm praying the Liturgy of the Hours, which is what the priests pray. I will do that from time to time, get on a roll. And praying is very, there are times of the day, and then there are other times where it's just a very casual, natural thing for me. By the way, just a quick aside here, for those of you who are longtime Stephen Cruiser fans, during this recent part of the conversation, no, I did not have to Google the definition of humble. I did.
That was good.
I'm fairly aware of it. But yeah, I think regular prayer is, I think we mentioned in last week's conversation too, where I had a priest tell me once, when you sit down to your desk, pray then before you start to hit the work aggravation of the day.
Yeah,
say a separate prayer before you begin any of the rest of that. After your morning devotion, after I do the morning devotion, everything. Lately, I'm a big advocate of this, and I will keep advocating for it. I've been walking a lot to try to lose weight, and I like movement and prayer, walking while praying.
Yeah.
It's, it's you could start, if you're out in nature, it's even better. I'm walking around a neighborhood that's could use some work, but, it's a, but there's opportunities for prayer too. A lot of homeless problems here. And I say a prayer every time I bump into some of the homeless people or see something like that. I did when I'm out on the walk too.
Yeah.
So it's just the prayerfulness, big fan of it. As my sister once famously told someone, when Steve says he's praying for someone, he's actually praying for them.
I have a funny story about that. I was a guy was on the phone with me and he was asking me like, how can I pray for you? Right. One of those things. And I was like, this, that, and the other. He's like, okay, man, well, I'll be praying for you. And I thought that. I thought, oh, he said he'd pray for me. That's very nice. But he didn't hang up the phone. Like, he set his phone down in his truck and he just didn't realize he didn't hang up. And I hear him, like, not supposed to, but I'm hearing him pray for me there as he's driving down the road. And I thought, that's true faith right there, right? That's somebody who means what they say. And I loved that. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear that when you tell someone you're praying for me, you really are too.
I'm a big fan of prayerfulness, big fan of doing it as much as you can. And I, you know, again, I need a lot of work. One of the things you're talking about slowing down, I will say this, you know, people are talking about getting older. People like to complain about, that's another big online thing. Kids hit 30 and they start talking about getting old and I just want to slap them. I'm sorry. Just come here. I've got to just punch you.
Goodness.
But age, the perspective of age does help one take pause. Which I think that's one of the biggest advantages. When you've got perspective, you can look back and, you know, when you realize that everything isn't an existential crisis, you don't have to react like a teenager and everything. I think that's quite helpful and does help on the, in theory, on the faith journey after a while when you've got a lot of perspective.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
That's what I'm telling myself anyway.
Yeah, seriously.
Just living life, right? Spending those days. There's a reason that gray hair is the sign of wisdom. It's because you've had all those mistakes to prove it, you know?
Yeah, well, I went gray in my 20s, and I can assure you I was not wise then.
But you probably had a lot of experiences.
It was the 80s when I was in my 20s. So there were. I was a young stand-up comic in the 1980s. So, yeah.
Let's just call
them experiences. Yeah, we'll do that. Chris, do you want to? We've hit our timer, but it doesn't matter. It's a great conversation. We can continue on for a little bit if we want. But Chris, I know you're working today, and as we record this, and I'm sorry, I'm sniffling into the phone now. It's been horrible here. It's just dusty, windy, hot, and my sinuses are in full rebellion right now. Let me see what Chris, you go ask. I know there was one more thing I wanted to ask right now before we go, but
okay. If you want to, go ahead.
I got to remember what it was.
Oh, okay. Well, Trey, what advice would you have for anybody who is a believer who is thinking about getting involved in some sort of community service, whether it's an elected office or other types of, you know, forward facing community service?
Oh, man. So I actually just had this conversation the other day with Brett Dunn, who's actually running for the Senate seat that I was talking about. And we met together and broke bread, you know, because we were potentially going to be running against each other. And so we would just, he's a believer and he's a conservative. And so we had some great conversation, but he's also like 25 years younger than me. And so, I've watched him grow up in this town. He's a Marine, great guy. But I had this opportunity to kind of, you know, be the elder statesman a little bit at 52, right? To be able to go, hey, let me give a couple of points of advice. And one of them was really centered around that, Chris, like, how do you live out your faith in this public arena where you're not fake and you genuinely have concern for those around you, even those who didn't elect you, right? Those who pulled pulled the ballot for a different person. How do you still, and it came down to, for me, to serving people. So my advice was, as hard as you work to win, work just as hard to serve, right? Because unfortunately in politics, you have to win to then serve. And that's a little bit different in the church, right? In the church, you just walk in and you can serve. You can serve wherever. But in the political arena, you got to win first. And that takes a lot of energy and often a lot of dollars. a lot of conversations, and that can exhaust you. But if you have that charisma and confidence, and you can go out and conquer any mountain, but that's not the goal. The goal is not just to win. The goal is to serve these people. You know, if 52% elected you, there's still 48% that you need to serve. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I would just say, as a believer, don't forget the entirety of the community, right? When you're serving, you serve everyone. Now, yeah. You may still make decisions that align much more to your party and certainly to the constituents who elected you, the majority. That's the way these, you know, Democratic Republic works. But you just can't forget about, right? You don't forget about the other people that you're serving. You have to listen and take their account in, and then do what you think's best for the community.
Well, and you're even serving people who didn't cast a ballot at all.
But that's true too. Yeah. Some who could care less, yeah. But you still have to serve them.
Yeah.
That's an idea that's been completely lost in a lot of American politics right now. And you just made another case for more local involvement with everything too, because everybody who gets into politics now calls themselves a public servant, and that drives me nuts. Real pet peeve right. of mine. That's like, no, you're not serving anybody but yourself here. You're not. But the thing is like, you're in a local school board here. You've got to physically run into some of the people you're doing things for, or maybe doing things that they don't like. Right. There's an accountability factor at the local level that you don't get in Washington. You know,
that's right.
That's true.
You've got, you know, Elisa Murkowski, who's from Alaska, and she's a zillion miles away in Washington. I'm pretty sure she's not very representative of most of her constituents back home right now, but she doesn't bump into them that much anymore. And so I think that's a wonderful, and then it's to remember that you're serving the people. And I think it's the more we can bring things down to, you know, the micro level, the local level like that, the more maybe that servant's mindset can get in there, because people think, okay, like in, you get out and you meet people who you disagree with, and then you find out, oh, well, they don't have fangs. Oh, that's cool. And you might have a whoa, a conversation, because I hear those still happen. And
mostly what I'm trying to convince local people who are interested in the politics of the area is to go ahead and step out there and do it. Like, you just have to get out there and do it. It's the narratives and the stories and all of this polarity that happens in the federal level, it's not near as bad on the local level, but it's still there. And so people are so scared of, you know, being run through the mud, or, you know, they're so scared that people are going to hate them for their decisions. Instead of saying, I just got to get out here and do it. If it's what's right to do, I've got to do the right thing and not worry about the political ramifications. I'm going to try to make the best decision I can every single vote. And one of those votes will eventually not get me elected again. But I hope that I have done my due diligence, listened to my constituents, and made the best decision I could at the time.
I remember what I wanted to ask you. It's just about the political part of it and you going off. Uh-huh. Like, you know, what would you advise people of? One thing, you mentioned that you were appointed in here, and I know that happens frequently in school districts. But for people who maybe don't know a lot of people, but still want to run for the school board, is there a big legacy effect in a lot of school boards, or was that just like a one-off with you? Because I get the feeling there's a big legacy effect. I know there is in the school board here. My soon-to-be new congresswoman was the head of the school board. And when I was in high school, her father was the head of the school board, and he's my recently deceased congressperson. Is there, or can an outsider just say, you know what, we moved into this district 5 years ago, I want to be more involved. Like, can somebody just jump in like that? Or is it hard? Is that a tough nut to crack?
Yeah, I think somebody could jump in and do it. The smaller the town, like we're 120,000 people. So we're probably to the point now where a newcomer could come in and be able to get elected, particularly if they had a good platform and they, you know, were publicly public education minded. But there was a time where you kind of needed to be kin to the guy before, or at least that was your cousin or whatever. And, you know, we've seen, Chris and I've grown up in this town. We were born here. There was about 20,000 people in the whole county, and now it's 120,000. So in 50 years, it's, you know, 6x from what it was. So we've seen massive growth, but certainly when Chris and I grew up, there were generational politicians, right?
Oh, yeah. I think we finally started to break out of that. I mean, it seemed like it really did seem like there were times when almost every every elected official in the county had the same last name.
Right. Yeah. And they're the ones now that the roads are named after and stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, and even now, like the current mayor of Covington, you know, the county seat of our right. county yeah. is she's, I mean, she's brilliant. She's one of those people who doesn't take any crap off anybody, yeah. but she's a legacy politician because her father was on the city council for so many years.
That's right. Yep. And then so and was her brother. Her
brother. Yep. Yeah, that's right.
But she has She's a t-shirt, Stephen, you would love this lady. She has a t-shirt as the mayor that she wears around City Hall that says, go ahead, call HR. She said yeah. she's the first mayor in the city of Covington history to have an HR file.
She would
That's
too.
Hilarious.
Yeah, she'll just say it.
Well, Trey Bailey, this is a magnificent conversation. We'd love to have you back on to talk more about more. I might have you on as a guest on my podcast to talk just politics.
Oh, you totally should.
Yeah, we'll give this some germination time, and then 6 months from now, maybe I'll have you on. Guest on the Cruiser Cabana.
You can put him on 5 o'clock somewhere.
We could. Well, no. We have a rule. It's you got to be.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Never
mind. Steve, my co-host on 5 o'clock somewhere. And we decided there was Fox News was raiding the town hall media hen house quite vigorously a few years ago.
That's true.
Stealing people away from us like crazy.
That is true.
And so my co-host and I then decided that the only guest we could ever have on that would be other town hall media employees. And we mostly have stuck to that.
So how many podcasts do you have, Stephen?
I have three here at Pete. This one, a comedian friend of mine and I who writes for us, Kevin Downey Jr., we do one called Unwoke that's a little out there. And then I've been doing one the longest called the Cruiser Cabana podcast, where I'm trying to make it more guest centric. It wasn't always guest centric. I'm trying to get more guests. I'm trying to do more guests on there now.
And that's what this podcast was born out of.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Trey,
this way all over the place. It's fun.
You want to share your podcast with our audience?
Sure. Yes, please.
Yeah. And Stephen, you're going to be like, gosh, this guy's a broken record, but yeah, we have a local podcast. It's called the Town Square Podcast. And it's really, really kind of where local advocates for Newton County bring their different perspectives into this messy middle, we call it, to have a conversation where aim is unity, not uniformity. And it's we have, again, here in the Deep South, we have these Confederate monuments. And this is kind of where the idea for this podcast was born out of. It was a very divisive thing. It took political ideology. It took racial ideology and all these things into the mix, and just was a bit of a powder keg. No one was talking to each other. Everyone was just yelling and screaming. And so a buddy of mine, African-American Democrat, we like had civil debate, right? We had civil debate about this topic, and just both of us listened and heard each other's perspective. We humanized the points. It wasn't just, rhetoric and yelling. And we just said, how could we do this in the public square? Like, how could we model this behavior as well as entertain some of these conversations? And so we created this podcast, the Town Square Podcast. It is really about Newton County and the concerns of Newton County. We've talked about the rising gun violence amongst teens, racial division, political polarity, economic development. We're in a booming area, and so there's a lot of apartments. And so that's got, people all up in the their craw, as we would say here in the South. And then just, we're the Hollywood of the South. And so we've got cult shows like The Vampire Diaries, Dukes of Hazzard, and now Sweet Magnolias. And so tourism is a big thing in our town, but not all the locals like tourism. So just a great place, the podcast, to come and have these conversations, and where our public citizens can feel like they're involved in it. They hear the different perspectives. They can chime in online. That's us. It's the townsquarepodcast.com. Co-host Gabriel Stovall. We do that together and have a great time, and hopefully are really moving the needle for unity in our community.
That sounds fantastic. Conversation is the key, kids, and divinely inspired humanization.
Hey, there you go.
That's right. There we go. We got a theme.
There's our programming director.
It just hit me when you said humanization. I said, yes. Yeah. We pray more to be more human. Talk to God more to be more human.
Absolutely.
It's an easy thing to do. Well, Trey, really, this is fantastic. Thank you very much for being on today. And excuse me, I'm getting, sorry, post-nasal drip.
So you're not getting emotional.
I'm still dead inside. like, don't worry, kids. I'm not getting mushy here.
Not getting mushy on us.
Stephen and Chris, I really appreciate this opportunity. I love talking about these things. So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It's been a great conversation.
And we will have you back on again, or I'll have you on the cabana, or we'll do both. Thank you very much, Trey. Sounds great.